Hi, Dave Emery here. This is, for the record, program number 945, Miscellaneous Articles and Updates. This is being recorded on February 2nd of the year 2017. There are many, many stories and paths of inquiry that I want to update and or add. I wanted to move beyond the Trump and Confabonda series. However, that is a gift that keeps on giving. So many of the updates will be directly or indirectly related to that. There will probably be several more miscellaneous articles and updates, although who knows, as we go, I may be making some of those more specific or an addendum or sequel to another program. Now, there is so much to talk about, and as I've said in other programs, I want to try to make this program more listener-friendly. I can appreciate the humor in that one for veteran listeners or people who are new. Oh, really? Dave Emery wants to make his program more listener-friendly. Maybe he ought to shut the bleep up, huh? That will never happen. When I die and not until fish swim, birds fly, and I talk. However, as I've said before, if there were a Guinness Book of World Records Award for on-air broadcast pedantry, I would own it. So in an effort at maybe doing a little less reading of text, I will be doing some. And yet, adhering to the sourcing-slash-documentation-heavy format that I find is essential in this world of fake news and what Kellyanne Conway referred to as alternative facts, pure newspeak, that. I'm going to, in some cases, just read the headline and credits and so forth, and then summarize the article in some, such as our first story. I am going to read excerpts of text. Of course, when Antonin Scalia departed the scene about a year ago, the Republicans basically massed to block any chance of Barack Obama naming his successor and thereby swinging the ideological balance of the Supreme Court. Trump has now made his nomination, and it is a pretty good bet that in the next 4 to 8 years, both Justice Kennedy and Justice Ginsburg will either retire and or die. In Justice Ginsburg's case, I think the latter may be made to happen for her. We'll see. Of course, when you're 80-something, how can you tell if it is done properly, like heart attack, cancer, who knows? But I think it is probable that Donald Trump will appoint at least two, very possibly three Supreme Court justices, and that will give the Supreme Court a 6-3 right-wing, that's a euphemism, bias for as far as we can see, huh? And in that context, from the Daily Mail of the UK's online version of February 1st, yesterday of 2017, a story by Alan Goodman. Exclusive, Trump's Supreme Court pick Neil Gorsuch founded and led club called Fascism Forever against liberal faculty at his elite all-boys D.C. prep school, reads in part as follows. By the way, of course, it's just 49. He'll be there for a long time. Supreme Court Justice nominee Neil Gorsuch, G-O-R-S-U-C-H, founded and led a student group called the Fascism Forever Club at his elite high school, dailymail.com, can reveal. The club was set up to rally against the left-wing tendencies, unquote, of his professors while attending a Jesuit all-boys preparatory high school near Washington, D.C. The name may be inconvenient for a Supreme Court nominee facing a tough confirmation battle. However, it also shows the depth of Gorsuch's right-wing credentials and his penchant for mischief while attending his exclusive prep school in the 1980s. President Donald Trump nominated Gorsuch, a 49-year-old U.S. appellate judge, to replace the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia on Tuesday. Gorsuch founded the Fascism Forever Club during his freshman year at Georgetown Preparatory, now a $30,000-a-year private Jesuit school that is one of the most selective in the U.S. He served as the club's president until he graduated in 1985, according to his senior yearbook. That speaks for itself, and indeed, go back and listen to For the Record 944, as imperfect and perhaps unsuccessful ultimately in its design as that may be. Fascism Forever is exactly what you all are damn well going to see. Indicative of that, from the Raw Story blog of January 29th of 2017, article by David Ferguson, F-E-R-G-U-S-O-N. Democrats and Republicans can't believe Trump put, quote, Nazi, unquote, Steve Bannon on National Security Council. Reads in part, on Saturday, President Donald Trump announced that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and the National Director of Intelligence will no longer be included in all meetings of the National Security Council's Principals Committee. However, the president's order said former Breitbart.com CEO Stephen K. Bannon will be attending every meeting alongside the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, and some of the highest-ranking officers in the nation's security and intelligence services. Chairman of Joint Chiefs and DNI treated as afterthoughts in cabinet-level principal meetings. And where is CIA? Cut out of everything, wrote former UN Ambassador Susan Rice on Sunday, according to the New York Daily News. This is stone-cold crazy, Rice continued. Again, quoting, after a week of crazy, who needs military advice or intel to make policy on ISIL, Syria, Afghanistan, or DPRK? Unquote. Trump loves and trusts the military so much he just kicked them out of the National Security Council and put a Nazi in their place, unquote. She said, well, she's got it right. And I'm sure if you could get him in his private conversations with his fellow Nazis, quote, alt-right, unquote, media maven Stephen K. Bannon would readily agree and with pride. Of course, publicly they have to make nice. I recall, again, something I mentioned last week, in an interview with The Hollywood Reporter, and after confronted with charges that he and others of his ilk in the Trump administration and or campaign represented darkness, he replied, quote, darkness is good. Dick Cheney, Darth Vader, Satan, that's power. It always helps us when they're blind to who we are and what we're doing. Well, who we are, I'm sure, meant Nazi. And if you could get him with his fellow underground right people, he would say so. And with great pride and perhaps even a grudging degree of thanks to anyone who would acknowledge the obvious. But, and he knows, darkness is good. It always helps us when they're blind to who we are and what we are doing. I also like the grouping Dick Cheney, Darth Vader, Satan. Yep, that's not guilt by association. That's association by guilt. Interesting grouping, that. And you know that when a bowl of cold oatmeal like Susan Rice can get it right and describe the new NSC kingpin, and he appears to be past the point, that as a Nazi, you know things are getting late. It is very late in the day. More about Bannon. New York Times, January 29th of 2017. Bannon is given security role usually held for generals, unquote, by Glenn Thrush, T-H-R-U-S-H, and Maggie Haberman, H-A-B-E-R-M-A-N. Skipping down, I'm speaking about the fact that Trump and Stephen Miller, another of his alt-right advisors, had helped to approve this. But the defining moment for Mr. Bannon came Saturday night in the form of an executive order giving the rumpled right-wing agitator a full seat on the Principals Committee, unquote, of the National Security Council, while downgrading the roles of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the director of National Intelligence, who will now attend only when the council is considering issues in their direct area of responsibilities. It is a startling elevation of a political advisor to a status alongside the Secretaries of State and Defense and over the President's top military and intelligence advisor. Skipping down. But in terms of real influence, Mr. Bannon looms above almost everyone except the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, in the Trumpian pecking order, according to interviews of two dozen Trump insiders and current and former national security officials. I would note, in passing, I'll stick a link or two in the description. But when the Truppenkampf Verbande, as I put it, observed Holocaust Remembrance Day, they pointedly omitted any reference to Jews in the Holocaust. Quite correctly, many more died than just Jews. The Holocaust itself has actually served as something of a vehicle for eclipsing many of the profound ideological manifestations and theoretical principles of fascism, including its doctrinaire anti-labor and anti-communist ideological pillar, and the fact that one of the reasons why so many, quote, conservatives, unquote, loved the Nazis was because of all the Soviets they killed and the communists they killed elsewhere. However, omitting any reference to Jews on Holocaust Remembrance Day is very, very interesting indeed. Jared Kushner is actually an Orthodox Jew. I suspect very strongly that he is what I have termed a Bormann Jew. The remarkable and deadly Bormann Flight Capital Network learned early on that using Jews as front people is a superb vehicle for masking a Nazi money laundering and investing operation. And Kushner now appears to be very largely someone who does photo ops with Ivanka. Many observed that omitting any mention of Jews on Holocaust Remembrance Day is a first step toward Holocaust denial. And well, it is indeed the Trump administration responded very critically, saying basically, up yours, to people who criticize that.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Among the many alt-right people who have been responsible for putting together the Truppenkampf Verbande, a fellow named Charles, quote, Chuck, unquote, Johnson, not to be confused with Charles C. Johnson of the Little Green Footballs, is the name of his blog. Again, Charles C. Johnson of Little Green Footballs, basically an Obama Democrat now, should not be confused with Charles, quote, Chuck, unquote, Johnson. From Forbes magazine of January 9th of 2017, article by Ryan Mack, M-A-C, and Matt Drange, D-R-A-N-G-E. A troll outside Trump power is helping to pick your next government. Charles Chuck Johnson, a controversial blogger and conservative. Oh, I love that conservative. No, he's not a conservative. A very abused term these days. Oh, but let me begin again. Charles, quote, Chuck, unquote, Johnson, a controversial blogger and conservative, that belongs in quotes, online personality, has been pushing for various political appointees to serve under Donald Trump, according to multiple sources close to the president-elect's transition team. While Johnson does not have a formal position, Forbes has learned that he is working behind the scenes with members of the transition team's executive committee, including billionaire Trump donor Peter Thiel, to recommend Vent and give something of a seal of approval to potential nominees from the so-called, quote, alt-right, unquote. And I would note that Johnson hoped to create a database, which is called theplumlist.com. And that's interesting because Peter Thiel maintains a database for the Trump appointees called Plum List, in quotes and two words. One would have to suspect that those are, in fact, one and the same. And again, it is worth noting that Johnson is not a conservative at all. He is, quote, alt-right, unquote. Skipping down. Despite his disregard for facts and reckless approach to publishing, Johnson, who was recently photographed at a dinner attended by white supremacists in Washington, D.C., built a significant following among many who self-identified as being part of the alt-right, unquote. Trump drew significant support from those same followers during the election. That is the meeting by Richard Spencer, a couple of blocks from the White House at which people gave the Nazi salute and said Heil Trump. Spencer read Third Reich anti-Semitic propaganda in the original German for the assembled guests. Skipping down. In this Forbes article, Johnson attributed much of the work that he and others have done in support of Trump to being able to tap into voters' emotions through memes such as the Pepe the Frog cartoon that became an informal mascot for Trump supporters. It's actually it morphed into whatever it may have been in the beginning. It morphed into a white supremacist symbol. One of the things to note is that these people are not dumb at all. It's one of the many, many fatal mistakes the so-called progressive sector, as always, note the use of the term so-called, has made. Interesting question posed in the Talking Points memo live wire of January 30th of 2017. This by Esme, E-S-M-E, Crib, C-R-I-B-B. Mystery convoy of, quote, military, unquote, vehicles flying, quote, Trump, unquote, flag spotted in Kentucky. And this is about a group of tan military appearing vehicles who were flying a Trump flag as they drove through Louisville, Kentucky. The vehicles, one had a blue flag with Trump and Make America Great Again on it. Skipping down, Defense Department spokesman Major Jamie Davis said that it would violate regulations to fly that flag on a military vehicle. Skipping down, Davis said it would also violate regulations to run a military convoy with no unit markings on the vehicles, and said he did not think the vehicles belonged to any service branch. Per the report, he suggested they were military surplus. Well, that's understandable. that actually turned out to be rather an optimistic assessment. An answer to that question came very shortly after Talking Points Memo LiveWire asked it. ABC News of February 1st, 2017 by Luis Martinez, M-A-R-T-I-N-E-Z. This provides an answer. What was that mystery military convoy that the Pentagon spokesman didn't think was a military unit? Again, by Luis Martinez, all kidding aside, military convoy flying Trump flag belonged to SEAL unit. This by ABC News yesterday, February 1st of 2017. The military convoy spotted on Sunday flying a Donald Trump flag near Louisville belonged to an East Coast-based SEAL unit, a Navy spokesperson told ABC News. Skipping down. The video shot on Sunday on a highway near Louisville showed the lead vehicle of a convoy flying a large blue Donald Trump flag from an antenna. The vehicles did not have any identifiable markings, and the mystery deepened when local military bases in Kentucky said that the vehicles did not belong to their units. Quote, the convoy were service members assigned to an East Coast-based Naval Special Warfare Unit driving vehicles while transiting between two training locations, unquote. Lieutenant Jacquie, J-A-C-Q-U-I, Maxwell, a spokesperson for the Naval Special Warfare Group 2, told ABC News. Naval Special Warfare Units is the official Navy term for its elite SEAL Special Operations teams. Does not bode well, I think, for the future. Referencing that here, the nominee for the Department of Education is Betsy DeVos, married to the head of Amway, and the sister to Eric Prince, who was the founder of the Blackwater mercenary group. Basically, it served as a proxy in Iraq, proxy warfare unit in Iraq. And Prince himself is a former Navy SEAL, and his outfit employs many of the extremely formidable special operations warfare people, Green Beret, Delta Force members, Navy SEALs like he was, and former Navy SEALs like he was. And given the proclivities of at least some of those special warfare people, like the people flying the Trump flag, the Navy SEAL unit flying the Trump flag, some of what I'm about to cover is very ominous indeed. From TRT World blog of January 23rd of 2017, by someone calling themselves or perhaps named Baba B-A-B-A Umar, U-M-A-R, the notorious Eric Prince set to make a comeback under Trump. The former head of private security firm Blackwater is reportedly advising U.S. President Donald Trump from behind the scenes. That doesn't sound too good. The thrust of this is that Trump is not only, or that, excuse me, Eric Prince is not only lobbying Trump with the aid of Steve Bannon, now a key member of the National Security Council. Eric Prince is lobbying Trump to not only re-employ his Blackwater outfit. It changed its name of the parent company of it, by the way, after Prince stepped down, was Joseph E. Schmitz, the Steuben-infatuated and German-infatuated member of the ultra-right-wing Schmitz family from Southern California, who was George W. Bush's Inspector General for the Pentagon and boasted of having basically cleaned the Jews out of any Pentagon contracting. He was a key advisor to Donald Trump's campaign. And speaking now of the aforementioned Eric Prince, in an interview with the right-wing Breitbart News owned by key Trump ally Stephen Bannon in July of 2016, Prince suggested that one way for the U.S. to destroy Daesh, that's ISIS, was to revive a controversial Vietnam War-era CIA torture and assassination campaign. That was quite notorious. By the way, an administrator of that was a guy named Roy Plosterman, who heads up Pierre Omidyar's, quote, philanthropic, unquote, operations, which had not only been very controversial, but lethally effective in many places, including India. More about that later. Speaking of the Phoenix assassination program, but Prince wants to revive it, arguing that it would help capture or kill the, quote, funders of Islamic terror, and that would even be the wealthy radical Islamist billionaires funding it from the Middle East and any of the other illicit activities therein. That could prove problematic. By the way, there has been a lot of press about Trump's barring emigres and travelers from many Muslim countries, except, of course, for Saudi Arabia, Natchez, and also, by the way, Pakistan and Afghanistan. All three, all told, are probably the most likely places to produce terrorist, emigre, or visitors to the U.S. That didn't stop Trump. One of the interesting things about the Prince proposal is that Prince, that's not the late singer, but Eric Prince, the sister of Betsy DeVos and the former head of Blackwater. Prince has been advising Trump, as it says, Prince has been advising Trump on security issues behind the scenes for some time now. Maureen Dowd wrote that Peter Thiel, a staunch supporter of Trump, showed her a, quote, picture on his phone of him posing with Eric Prince, who founded the private military company Blackwater, and Mr. Trump, who had no costume but joked that it wasn't, quote, NSFI, not safe for Internet. By the way, one of the things Prince is proposing, not surprisingly, is that the new assassination, Phoenix assassination program, be implemented in part using off-the-shelf private contractors like Blackwater. I also strongly suspect that ultimately anyone in the U.S. who is telling the truth might be the recipient of the kinds of lethal favors that Blackwater can dispense. Before Obama left office, he signed a Pentagon document authorizing billions of dollars to be spent, or maybe it's hundreds of millions, to be spent combating websites and media outlets that were, quote, propaganda outlets, unquote, for pro-Russian and other foreign hostile governments. Basically, that is an extension of the Orwellian and fascist fundament that coalesced during the closing years of Obama's administration, in which anyone who tells the truth about Ukraine, and Russia has been doing that, is basically a foreign terrorist or whatever. One of the things about Stephen Bannon, this is fundamental, being appointed to the NSC, when the martial law contingency plans were formulated under the Reagan administration by Oliver North, one of the features of the martial law contingency plans, and we should note that even with federalization of the National Guard, the military does not have enough troops to keep waging the wars abroad, and it figures to be doing that, and also maintain martial law. Basically, war fighting is a very narrow skill set, and even many Pentagon officials would readily admit that maintaining civilian order is not suited to professional soldiers or sailors or airmen or what have you. One of the features of the martial law contingency plans, as we discussed, in anti-fascist archive program number 32. Boy, how time flies. Back in the late spring of 1987, in which we covered Alfonso Chardy's article from the Miami Herald. I believe that was May 5th of 1987. I may be wrong. But in any event, he noted the martial law contingency plans as drawn up by Donald Trump to be executed originally under the auspices of FEMA. And still on the books, they involved the federal deputization of paramilitary right-wingers and their employment as government enforcers of martial law. Basically militia types. The gun-toting element of the, quote, alt-right, unquote, and that might very well ultimately include people with the consummately lethal professional skills of many of the former spec ops troops employed by elements like Blackwater. I think that is an aspect of Stephen Bannon's inclusion on the National Security Council that should not go unmentioned. It probably will.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Now, turning to Tulsi Gabbard, a driving force behind the Bernie Sanders campaign, and generally someone who has caused all kinds of problems for the Democratic Party, including resigning her position as deputy chairperson of the Democratic National Committee in February 2016 to go to work for Bernie Sanders' campaign. It was Tulsi Gabbard who nominated Bernie Sanders at the Democratic National Convention, and she was listed as the Sanders vice presidential candidate on write-in ballots in California. As we looked at, For the Record, 941 and 942, this woman, usually described as a rising star in the Democratic Party, is a member of an offshoot of the Hare Krishna cult. That is a largely fascist mind-control cult. She is described as the first Hindu in Congress. It is at least superficially misleading, although technically Hindu. The Hare Krishnas are a particular branch of the Hare Krishnas. And we noted Tulsi Gabbard's incoherent views on things like foreign intervention, Islam, and a lot of different things. She lauded Prabhupada, the guru who founded the Hare Krishna cult, despite the fact that he openly endorsed racist and Nazi views, ranging from viewing black people, including Indians, Native Americans, and American blacks as fundamentally inferior. He had a eugenics point of view, endorsed Hitler's campaign against the Jews, and generally viewed the, quote, Aryans, unquote, as genetically superior to others and destined to rule the world. It is not hard to see how the Hare Krishna cult could have ultimately manifested as fascist or many elements of it with an antecedent like that. Tulsi Gabbard has been networking with and helped to arrange the details of the American tour of Narendra Modi, the Prime Minister of India, or the head of state of India. I believe his formal title is Prime Minister. And Modi's BJP is a political cat's paw and front for the RSS. That is a Hindu nationalist / fascist organization modeled on the German Nazi Party and Mussolini's black shirts. It was the RSS that murdered Gandhi. We noted in 941 and 942 that an article in the Huffington Post basically talked about Tulsi Gabbard and her association with members of the Chris Butler offshoot of the Hare Krishna cult, or branch of. After Prabhupada died, many different gurus took over, and many different subsects of the Hare Krishna cult got going. And even though it described her connections with the cult as rumors, her parents, her in-laws, her husband, and virtually all of her inner sanctum of her professional staff as a congressperson are drawn from the Chris Butler operation. Interestingly, the author of that Huffington Post article said that there was no record of any public pronouncement by Tulsi Gabbard of her affiliation with the Chris Butler operation, despite the fact that an online archive referenced by that writer contained just exactly that. I thought that was puzzling. As it turns out, that was from the Civil Beat, or Honolulu Civil Beat. I was under the impression that that was sort of a subset or feature of the Huffington Post. No, actually, that was an early journalistic venture of none other than Pierre Omidyar, whose Phoenix program generated philanthropy chairman Roy Prosterman, we alluded to earlier. Pierre Omidyar helped to finance the rise of Narendra Modi in India, just as he helped to finance the Maidan coup in Ukraine. From Wikipedia, Pierre Omidyar, skipping down, in 2010, Omidyar launched online an investigative reporting news service, Honolulu Civil Beat, covering civic affairs in Hawaii. On September 4, 2013, Honolulu Civil Beat started a partnership with the Huffington Post, launching the web blog's latest regional edition, HuffPost Hawaii. Well, in light of Pierre Omidyar's activities, by the way, it's Pierre Omidyar who finances First Look Media and The Intercept, Nazi fellow traveler Glenn Greenwald's latest journalistic venture. In light of Pierre Omidyar's financing of Narendra Modi's campaign, and Tulsi Gabbard's networking with not only Narendra Modi's BJP, some of whose members also are involved with Donald Trump's Indian real estate ventures, but also Tulsi Gabbard's networking with the RSS, the Hindu nationalist slash fascist group that dominates Narendra Modi's cabinet and that murdered Gandhi back in 1948, I don't think perhaps the curious omission by that writer is, well, it's not as curious perhaps as we first thought it was. Tulsi Gabbard has been added again and again in 941 and 942. We noted her altogether anomalous political views about Muslims and foreign intervention. Very curious in light of the fact that she was one of the driving forces behind Bernie Sanders' campaign, financed, by the way, in part by Karl Rove's American Crossroads political super PAC. Tulsi Gabbard, once again in the news from The Guardian of January 26th of 2017. Article by Sabrina, S-A-B-R-I-N-A, Siddiqui, S-I-D-D-I-Q-U-I. Tulsi Gabbard reveals she met Assad in Syria without informing top Democrats. Basically, Tulsi Gabbard took a trip to Syria without informing top Democrats, met with Bashar al-Assad, and did so certainly without informing the Democratic leadership and possibly illegally. That certainly is not going to help the stock of the Democratic Party. In Syria, as we have noted, Bashar al-Assad, who is no day at the beach, he's rather like Gaddafi. He is the lesser of the evils involved in Syria, and he is an evil SOB. But the jihadis ranged against him, including subsets of al-Qaeda, are actually worse than he is. And there is an old Texas expression There is nothing like stepping in the cow flop to make you realize how nice tripping over a stone can be. Bashar al-Assad is the stone of these so-called moderate, unquote, jihadis in Syria are the cow flop, and we have stepped in that. Nonetheless, in the present political climate, for Tulsi Gabbard to suddenly jet over to Syria without checking with the leadership of the Democratic Party, perhaps doing so illegally, that depends on interpretation of certain laws, certainly doing so to the detriment of the Democratic Party, well, that is not exactly the smartest thing in the world. Recall that Tulsi Gabbard was not only interviewed by for a possible cabinet position by Donald Trump. She is viewed with great favor by Stephen Bannon, and Stephen Bannon also is a big fan of Narendra Modi in India, who he calls the Ronald Reagan of India. Worth noting, not only did Tulsi Gabbard's trip to Syria give the Democratic Party another black eye, how exactly did that happen? Now, from that very same Guardian article, skipping down, Gabbard's office claims her trip was funded by the Gabbard's office claims her trip was funded by the Arab American Community Center for Economic and Social Services, or ACSES, of Ohio. However, the group has not reported any financial revenue to the U.S. government since 2006. There may be a reason for that. Bassam, B-A-S-S-A-M, Kawam, K-H-A-W-A-M, the executive director of ACSES, who traveled with Gabbard, reportedly belongs to a pro-Assad Lebanese political party, the Syrian Social Nationalist Party, or SSNP. The party has dispatched its members to fight on behalf of the Assad regime during the nearly six-year war. Now, that is a political party most people have not heard of. In a nutshell, from the Atlantic magazine of June of 1987 by Ehud Yari, Y-A-R-I, Behind the Terror About the SSNP. This can be confirmed, by the way, from a number of texts that are footnoted and excerpted in the Wikipedia entry for the SSNP. Of that party, skipping down, and a member of this party apparently was the person who shepherded Tulsi Gabbard around Syria and made that introduction. A very interesting political party indeed, skipping down in the Atlantic story from June of 87. It is a party whose members, mostly Christians from church-going families, dream of resuming the war of the ancient Canaanites against Joshua and the children of Israel. They greet their leaders with a Hitlerian salute, sing their Arabic anthem, "Greetings to you, Syria," to the strains of "Deutschland, Deutschland über alles," and throng to the symbol of the red hurricane, a swastika in circular motion. These are the hallmarks of the Syrian Social Nationalist Party, or SSNP, the oldest terrorist organization in existence today and one of the most secret and deadly. More about that from the Wikipedia entry, Syrian Social Nationalist Party. By the way, this, like so many Wikipedia stories, soft pedals slash downplays the fascist nature of this party. It really falls very much in line with the fascist third position and has its roots in a phenomenon that we have spoken about but that is not generally well understood. When fascism got its beginnings, the colonial period was still very much in existence. And one of the things that both Nazi Germany and fascist Italy did was to manipulate people from some of the colonial holdings of some of their European enemies, such as France and Britain, as well as Muslim and Turkic minorities within the former Soviet Union, to use them as fascist cadre, proxy warriors, and as fifth columnists. That appears to be the case with the SSNP. Note about Wikipedia that generally it is soft on fascism. You can generally handicap that to the left. Nonetheless, excerpting the Wikipedia entry on the SSNP, founded in Beirut, Lebanon in 1932 as an anti-colonial and national liberation organization hostile to French colonialism, the party played a significant role in Lebanese politics and was involved in attempted coups d'etat in 1949 and 1961, following which it was thoroughly repressed. SSNP founder Antoine Sadeh, S-A-A-D-E-H, emigrated again to Brazil in 1938 and afterwards to Argentina, only to return to Lebanon in 1947, following the country's independence from the French in 1943, parenthetically during the war. On his way to Argentina, very interesting place, that on his way to Argentina, he visited Italy and Berlin, which increased the suspicions of the French that the SSNP might have been entertaining relations with the Axis, skipping down again. Some scholars were, however, bent on ascribing the blame of collusion of Sade with fascism. See, this is Wikipedia at its worst. Some scholars were, however, bent on ascribing. I don't think that requires much of a bent. However, this is how you have to handicap Wikipedia. You know, I mean, they approach the whole thing with an altogether equivocal, mealy-mouthed point of view that under the circumstances really is a form of lying. However, some scholars were, however, bent on ascribing the blame of collusion of Sade with fascism. Hence, Reeva Simon, R-E-E-V-A, Simon writes, "The party's leader for life was an admirer of Adolf Hitler, influenced by Nazi and fascist ideology," unquote. This, by the way, in the Encyclopedia of the Middle East. "The party adopted a reversed swastika as the party's symbol, sang the party's anthem to Deutschland über alles, and included developing the cult of a leader advocating totalitarian government and glorifying an ancient pre-Christian past and the organic whole of the Syrian Volk, or nation." Obviously, that was referenced in that Atlantic article. Skipping down again. "According to historian Stanley G. Payne, P-A-Y-N-E, the Arab nationalism was influenced by European fascism with the creation of at least seven Arab nationalist shirt movements similar to the brown shirt movement by 1939, with the most influenced ones being SSNP, the Iraqi Futawa Youth Movement, and the Young Egypt Movement. These three movements would share characteristics like being territorially expansionist, with the SSNP wanting the complete control of Syria, belief in the superiority of their own people, with Sade theorizing a distinct and naturally superior Syrian race, being, quote, non-rationalist, anti-intellectual, and highly emotional, unquote, and, quote, emphasizing military virtues and power and stressing self-sacrifice," unquote. Also, according to Payne, all these movements received strong influence from European fascism and praised the Italian and German fascism. Again, a phenomenon we have seen in many third-position fascist groups and organizations like the Muslim Brotherhood. So this is not that unusual. And when seen as the organization to which Tulsi Gabbard's Syrian Shepherd belong, I think it belongs. I think it assumes a larger significance in the context of the redoubtable Ms. Gabbard. In our superficial society, Tulsi Gabbard has minted a lot of political coinage from the simple fact that she's very attractive. She's a good-looking woman, and she is a veteran. She did two tours in Iraq as the head of a hospital unit. That, in our superficial society, is enough to make you a star. If she were willing to pose in a string bikini for a Sports Illustrated's swimsuit issue, she could run for president in this godforsaken media-driven society. Hell, Donald Trump might reach out and grab her by the P-word. Certainly, he appeared to be willing to at least entertain the possibility of her as a cabinet member. Tulsi Gabbard has been at it again. She co-sponsored House Resolution 447. This was passed by the House and is supportive of Ukraine moving into alliance with the EU, and it condemns people who disagree as terrorists, unquote. Very revealing that, and particularly in light of the OUNB heirs who are governing Ukraine at the moment, and the role of Pierre Omidyar in helping to finance the Maidan coup. This assumes larger significance and sinister. I don't have a lot of views on Ukraine moving into EU. Ukraine is certainly under a fascist government at this time. I suspect, as I said before, there will be some accommodation with Russia over Ukraine eventually that will result in NATO getting downgraded, if not eliminated, in Europe. Just look at what Steve Bannon has managed to do, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs vis-a-vis the NSC. People who might disagree with that, though, are not terrorists. The SSNP are, but certainly doesn't appear to have troubled Tulsi Gabbard a great deal under the circumstances. She also sponsored a bill, proof that a broken clock is right twice a day. This is a bill from the 114th Congress called the Stop Arming Terrorists Act, and this calls for the cessation of federal funds to underwrite the operations of elements like Al-Qaeda in Iraq and some of the Islamists, whom we have used as proxy warriors and as armed exponents of the Muslim Brotherhood's corporatist economics. Again, proof that a broken clock, and Tulsi Gabbard certainly appears to be that, is right twice a day. Donald Trump is right about it. At least his statements about doing that are correct. And Trump, too, is a broken record.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
From the New York Times of Thursday, January 26th of 2017, speaking of the RSS, article by Ellen Berry, vaunted literary festival gets jolt from India's far right. And this is talking about a prestigious Indian literary festival. Every year at this time, India's Beau Monde rearranges itself in Jaipur for a spectacular, popular five-day literary festival. And skipping down. So it was a startling sight this year to see the Jaipur Literature Festival featuring a panel by two leaders of the RSS, by the way, network with Tulsi Gabbard, the far-right group that gave rise to India's current Prime Minister, Narendra Modi. The RSS, which maintains that India is fundamentally a Hindu nation, has been barreling toward drawing room respectability for some time. Left-leaning Congress governments banned it three times in the last centuries, saying its ideas risked inciting violence against minority groups. These days, state television carries its leaders' speeches live, but there are few invitations in Indian public life more coveted than one to appear at the festival in Jaipur, that Mount Olympus of panel discussions. The two RSS men took their seat on the podium where a minute before an author had been asked rhetorical questions about the existence of beauty. How would the audience greet them as India's version of the Tea Party, giving voice to ideas that have taken on an extraordinary force in the electorate, or as India's version of the Ku Klux Klan propagating, quote, extremism and bigotry, unquote, as one author put it in a letter withdrawing from the event? In the end, arm's length politeness resigned, quote, we are acknowledging that the intellectual nerve center has shifted and the seat of cultural power has shifted because no one was interested in inviting these guys before 2014, said Shapriya, S-U-P-R-I-Y-A, Nair, N-A-I-R, a writer and editor who has attended the festival for the last 6 years. In any case, she said the shift rightward had already taken place in the larger society. This is a last bastion. So very much like what has happened with Donald Trump and the quote alt-right unquote in the U.S. The following, right below that article, might also ring a bell. This by Geeta Anand about the aforementioned Narendra Modi, who, along with the RSS, has been networking with St. Gabbard. Push bills for Indian election reform. Pressure mounted on Wednesday on Prime Minister Narendra Modi of India to push for a campaign finance overhaul, with a New Delhi nonprofit reporting this week that almost 70% of contributions to the nation's political parties came from undisclosed sources. Sort of an Indian Citizens United situation. The lack of transparency in Indian elections financing is well known, but the report by the nonprofit, the Association for Democratic Reforms, quantifies it for the first time. Again, I think remarkable parallels between the rise of Narendra Modi and the rise of the Trump and Confabanda here in the U.S. There, of course, has been all sorts of discussion about Donald Trump's Russian operations. The New York Times of Tuesday, January 17th of 2017, has an article by Megan Twohey, T-W-O-H-E-Y, and Steve Ader, E-D-E-R, of Brand's long flirtation with Russia. In Moscow, the Trumps chased deals but never developed a tower. And this talks about the fact that I'll actually read it. It was 2005, and Felix Sater, S-A-T-E-R, a Russian immigrant, was back in Moscow pursuing an ambitious plan to build a Trump Tower on the site of an old pencil factory along the Moscow River that would offer hotel rooms, condominiums, and commercial office space. Louis Sater, who used to spell his name with two T's, is a convicted felon, and we find out something else about him. Mr. Sater is a Russian immigrant, as that article stated. Now, reviewing very quickly from For the Record program 736, the making of Donald Trump and the Top Banana Republic part, whatever, I will have the notation talking about Felix Sater and his criminal activities, and then by the way, Sager was deeply involved with the promotion of Donald Trump's activities in his resorts and his hotels. Of Sager, there is every indication that the extraordinarily lenient treatment accorded Sager for his crimes resulted from Sager playing a get-out-of-jail-free card. Shortly before his secret guilty plea, Sager became a freelance operative of the Central Intelligence Agency, which raises more questions than it answers, but it certainly is interesting in light of the central position of Sager in Donald Trump's operations and his central role in Donald Trump's as-yet-abortive Russian ventures. By the way, hotels make an excellent cover for intelligence activity. We're going to conclude with this from the Green Bay Press Gazette and Paul Srubas, S-R-U-B-A-S, from January 23rd of 2017, Russians suspected of hacking local dens. And this talks about an alleged Russian hack. Now, about the, quote, hackers, unquote, skipping down. Two new users showed up as registered administrators of the website. Larissa at steamreel.ru and Iwartumba, Ewartumba, at mail.ru. The quote .ru unquote suffix indicates a Russian origin, Benson said. The profile pages of the users had characters in the Russian alphabet in address and about me fields, she said. That sounds very much like cyber false flag stuff. I mean, that's that club-footed characteristic of so much of the alleged Russian hacks. For the record, program 943, as well as 917, 923, and 924, go into that at greater length, sort of the updated version of painting Oswald red. This concludes For the Record, program number 945, miscellaneous articles and updates being recorded on February 2nd of 2017. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.